That's perfect. Thanks so much, James. My name's Ivan. I'm an addict. Yeah, it's really good to be here. I'm not gonna lie, I'm really quite nervous. I think this is the longest time I've ever done a chair for. Normally they're kind of like 10 to 15 minutes in like in the sort of small meetings that I do. So yeah, it's quite exciting actually. And yeah, I think it's fantastic that we can all kind of be here on Zoom. Much as I kind of say that with gritted teeth, because often I feel like when I join a Zoom meeting, I need like a bingo card which says, who's going to say, sorry, I can't hear you? Who's going to say, you lost your connection? Who's going to say, you sound like a robot? Et cetera, et cetera. But I think it is amazing because, us addicts, we're resourceful, if anything, and we will find any way to kind of get recovery and continue the momentum of recovery. And I think it is absolutely incredible how people have come together over the last year in the face of this just completely, adversarial circumstance. And I did help set up a couple of Zoom meetings with a few other fellows in Finchley in North London. And yeah, I mean, I've met so many people who I would have probably never otherwise had the pleasure of meeting. So we have people joining from New York, from Liverpool, from Dubai, from Qatar, from Australia, and I think that's incredible. And I've kind of been to meetings in like New York and LA and all these incredible places that I would never normally go to. So it's really, really interesting. And I think, a lot of us are really going to be really excited when face-to-face meetings come back. Because a lot of I mean, for me anyway, a lot of kind of, my recovery, like that, I mean, it was the hugs that did it. It was just that kind of that contact, seeing people face-to-face, not having this weird connection delay and, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think, a lot of us are quite excited about going back to face to face, but it's an exercise in patience, really. An exercise in patience and tolerance, if anything, just kind of waiting for the right time and waiting when things are safe enough. So yeah, it's really good to be here tonight. This is a meeting I've actually I don't think I've ever been to that I can recall, and it's always nice to do a new meeting, and it's nice to see some faces that I know here actually and that I've seen previously and in other meetings. It's really nice. It's also quite nice that it's quite small. I wasn't really sure how many people I was kind of expecting, and I think I remember doing one chair where I think it was probably about 50 people, and it was absolutely terrifying. It was great at the end, but it was pretty scary. So yeah, I'll go through, I suppose, a little bit about me. I celebrated 4 years clean just under a month ago. And yeah, I'm really happy. I feel like it's a really good place to be in. But this year, and especially the last sort of 3 or 4 months, has had a lot of challenges, which I'll get to in a bit. But yeah, a little bit about my using history. I try not to focus too much on war stories and kind of using history, because I mean, I don't know about you, but it's all the fucking same, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows what the using stories are like and what the war stories are like and the crawling around on the floor looking for crumbs and the just getting into these mad situations. So I try not to focus too much on that when I do a chair, because I think for me, I like to talk about the recovery side of things and what I'm doing in recovery and how I've got to where I am today. So I mean, I started like quite a lot of people I've heard in the rooms have started with. I started smoking weed and drinking around 13. And that kind of went through relatively kind of normally, I suppose, for a teenage kid through to around 17 when I discovered party drugs such as MDMA and ketamine and that kind of thing. And yeah, and I just hit the ground running with those. I was off. I remember from very early on, from pretty much the first time I tried those drugs, I was always. I always obsessed. I always obsessed about that. When are we going to have the next one? Where are we going tonight? How are we getting it? All that kind of thing. And a phrase that I hear often in recovery is an addict is often the last person to know that they're an addict. And that's really, really true. A lot of my friends would point these things out to me repeatedly, and they would say that, they would say things like, you're going a bit hard, aren't you? Oh, I'm a bit concerned. I'd be like, no, it's fine, it's fine. No, I'm just having fun. I'm just having fun. And all the excuses and the lies and the kind of like just ways and means to get more, really. It was, it got pretty depressing pretty quickly. And I've always had trouble with sleep. And I always thought it was just down to my personality. And it's only really been until the last kind of couple of years or so that I've actually started to resolve these problems with my sleep. And then I think back to it and I thought, fucking hell, maybe actually it was something to do with the copious amounts of drugs I was always using. And it never really clicked to me that that might be an issue. I remember I went through a really, really dark time back in 2012. I was studying at university, I was doing an undergrad, and in my second year of university, I moved away from my parents' home and I was living in a flat with a couple of flatmates, and just the madness that I subjected them to and the total insanity. And I went through some really, really dark times, very lonely times, and often times that were really lonely, even though I was surrounded by people. And that was something that I found quite key to the disease of addiction. Is often it's kind of, for me, it's typified by kind of having a sense of utter loneliness, even though I'm kind of surrounded by people and I'm putting on this kind of brave face and I'm kind of, you know, doing social things, but inside I feel completely empty, completely dead. And I went through quite a few years of feeling like that, and I worried my parents to death. I worried my friends to death, and I often didn't think of what the consequences were of how I was affecting them, but also how I was affecting myself. Now I've thought a lot back to this, and I've spent kind of years thinking and getting to the point of obsession over why am I an addict? Why the hell am I an addict? Why me? You know, what have I done wrong? And I've looked kind of, I've asked my parents about my family history. You know, there's no trace of addiction or alcoholism. You know, I didn't have a traumatic childhood. You know, I grew up in a comfortable, not a rich family, but, you know, comfortable. We had enough, and, you know, I didn't want for anything. So I spent a lot of time, and, you know, particularly like the first year or so in recovery, obsessing about this and thinking, no, I've got to find the answer to this. And I had to let that go, because there is no reason for it. This disease doesn't discriminate. You know, I've met kind of doctors, teachers, lawyers. I've met people from every end of the spectrum, you know, from every walk of life. And nobody really understands why addiction happens or where it comes from. And I think there's studies into it, but I can't be bothered with that. You know, I've made peace with the fact that I'm an addict, and that's fine. And that's okay. And actually these days I try and kind of show a bit of gratitude for that, because it's got me where I am today. It's got me into these meetings. It's got me to meet people like you. And, you know, it's got me doing service. It's got me doing things that I never would have thought I was doing, and looking at my life in ways that I never would have thought. Quite recently, over the last sort of few months, I made a decision to change sponsors. And it was quite a big decision, because I've been with my sponsor since I came in, you know, when was it? It's about February 2016. So I've been with my now ex-sponsor for almost 5 years. So it was quite emotional. But I took a very kind of considered and recovery-based approach to it. You know, I took time to think about it. I took time to write about it. I spoke with, you know, my partner and some other people in recovery. And I just thought it was the best thing for me, because he took me as far as he could. And I thought it was time for a change. You know, I wanted to work through the steps in another way with a different sponsor. And of course, I'm sure, you know, some of you can relate to this, but on the day that I was going to call him in the morning, I was full of fear. I thought, I'm going to call him and he's going to say, you know, I'm going to tell him this, and he's going to say, what a fucking waste of 5 years. This is dreadful. How dare you? You know, I'm so upset. You know, this is horrible. And, you know, it came to it, and I was kind of like psyching myself up, and I called him and said to him, you know, I think I'd like to work through the steps with another sponsor. And he said, great, I think that's the best thing for you. You know, if that's what you think, that's brilliant. And, you know, this is just a little insight into sometimes where my mind goes. You know, I go straight to that fear and straight to the worst case scenario. And, you know, even before doing this chair tonight, I was swinging in between, I'm going to get the Oscar for recovery, I'm going to get, you know, an A star in recovery, I'm going to get a standing ovation, and then other end of the spectrum, I'm going to get booed off the stage, you know, I'm going to do terrible. And often it's, you know, it's neither of those. And it's just, you know, it's just the way my head works. And the best thing to do is just to be honest about those kind of things and just say them out loud, because that takes a lot of the power out of them. And, you know, there's something really powerful about writing. And I think, you know, that's where a lot of the stuff in the steps come in, is that for years, you know, I had the shit just flying around my head, you know, these horrible memories and horrible things I've done. I'm a horrible person. I've got a defective personality. It's something fundamentally wrong with me. And as soon as I started writing this stuff out during the course of the steps, you know, it just takes all the power out of it. And I think it's a fantastic way, you know, just picking up a pen and just writing stuff, you know. And if there's anyone who's new in the room, and if you've yet to find a sponsor, yet to start the steps, you know, just pick up a pen, just write what's in your head. If you're having a shit day, you know, just write, I'm having a shit day. I feel really terrible. My boss at work has been shit to me, whatever, you know. And I do find it takes a hell of a lot of the power out of it. So yeah, you know, just to go back to the kind of, just a little anecdote, just to go back to the whole kind of family thing, you know, about looking into my family history. I had a weird experience because last year, it was sort of middle of last year, my mum came to me and said, I'm a little bit worried about your father because he's drinking quite a lot. And, you know, he drinks a good half a bottle of wine every night. And I'm a little bit worried, you know, because he's, you know, he doesn't want to stop, you know, and it's kind of, I'm fine. I don't know how to approach it. And, you know, this kind of thing went off in my head. I was like, there we go. That's the reason, you know, that's the reason that I was searching for all these years, you know. Oh my God, this is great. So my dad's an alcoholic. This is where it comes from. Fantastic. You know, but then a couple of weeks later, you know, my mom kind of came to me and said, oh, it's, you know, it's really weird. I just kind of had a chat with him and he just said, yeah, okay, I'll stop. And then he just stopped. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, how did he do that? You know, I tried for so long. I tried for so long to do that. And how can he just kind of, you know, turn around, wake up one morning and say, yeah, I'll just stop. And he has, you know, he doesn't buy alcohol anymore. He's just stopped drinking. So it's crazy, but, you know, I've made my peace with being an addict, and I just know that, as we say in the literature, one is too many and a thousand never enough. And I remember feeling a great deal of shame, especially kind of in my first year of recovery. I remember feeling a great, great deal of shame over having using thoughts and, you know, the kind of the desire to use something, like having a really long day at work and then getting home and thinking, oh, you know, remember when I used to have a spliff like after work and, you know, just play some video games or something, or, you know, like have the odd Valium or something. But once I remember it was kind of like a dirty little secret, and I had so much shame over it. And then one day I shared with my sponsor and I said, look, This is terrible. This is the worst thing in the world. And, you know, it's going to completely invalidate my entire recovery so far, but I still get using thoughts occasionally. And he turned around to me and he was like, Ivan, an addict has had a using thought, you know, call the police. You know, this is like, this is completely normal. You know, loads of people in recovery get using thoughts. And I realized again, that was another kind of reminder that actually saying these things out loud, you know, so many people will be able to relate to this stuff. And that's something that has kept me coming all these years and has kept me sharing and gets me doing service, is that I know that the people here relate to what I'm going through and the stuff that goes through my head. And it's really nice. There's nothing like it in the world that I've found. So it's a really kind of special fellowship to be part of. So yeah, just to kind of go through a bit of the things, you know, some of the stuff that I do in my recovery at the moment that really helps me. I've always been really keen on service, and that has always been a really, really integral part of my recovery. And I found that just doing service, like to anyone who's new, get yourself a service commitment as fast as you can, Because just at the most basic level, it keeps you coming to a guaranteed meeting at least once a week. And, you know, if you can get maybe two or three or something, it's really up to the individual how much service is good for them. And I know that when I first came in, you know, I took on something like four or five service commitments, and then I found myself getting burnt out, and I found the right level for me. And now, you know, I've got a couple of service commitments, regular service commitments in meetings that I go to each week. I've done a lot of service at kind of the area level, so ASC level. Some of the most rewarding service I'm doing at the moment is for PI, which is public information. And I found that absolutely incredible because we contact professionals who work with addicts on a regular basis. And we do presentations, and you know, we get someone to come along and do a chair, you know, a 10 or 15 minute chair, and we just answer any questions. And it's really amazing service because you'd be quite shocked at how much people assume about NA and what NA is and what we do here, and things like the word God, which you know, sometimes are actually quite fair assumptions. You know, I remember coming in hearing the word God and thinking it was some kind of weird ass Christian cult or something. And being completely kind of a bit, you know, standoffish with that whole thing, and then just sticking around, just having a bit of faith, you know, just okay, maybe it'll actually be different to what I'm thinking in my head, sticking around a little bit, and then finding out that really God is just a placeholder for, you know, the concept of a higher power. So yeah, you know, doing service I think is really, really integral, and that's how we've kind of managed as a fellowship to stay alive during this pandemic, is just to keep, you know, people have just been amazing with doing service, and people have really stepped up to the plate and gone through completely new systems and processes, and you know, pissing around with Zoom and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's been so much hard work, and that gives me a lot of confidence in the fellowship, and it just kind of reminds me that I am in the right place. Because you know, like, we don't get paid, we do this because we want to recover, we do this because we want a better life, and you know, once we get a better life, we want to kind of try and keep that. So yeah, I'm a big advocate of service. So, you know, anyone who's kind of new, try and get yourself a service commitment. You know, there's any meeting that I've gone to, they'll always say, you know, we'll create a service commitment for you. You know, if you're looking for service, you really like this meeting, we can get something for you to do. Yeah, I think with a couple of the hardest things that I found in recovery, and I know a couple of things that did put me off somewhat, were the concept of higher power, which I just spoke about. I found that really difficult when I came in, and it wasn't until obviously I worked steps two and three, which all about, you know, coming to believe in the higher power, and it's all about the handing over and all that kind of thing, that I really kind of got a better understanding. And you know, I like to be really thorough to the point where it does get obsessive, and I've learned to kind of check that in my recovery. I've learned to check when I'm getting pedantic and when I'm getting obsessive about something. But I insisted when I first came into recovery, I have to know exactly what my higher power is. I have to be able to describe it, you know, in an essay, and it has to make perfect sense to me. I wanted to reverse engineer it basically. And my kind of preconception of like steps two and three was, you know, my sponsor was going to hand me a contract, and I would have to fill in all these details about my higher power, and I would have to sign exactly what my higher power is going to be for the next, you know, 500 years or something, and that would be it, you know, and I wouldn't be able to change it. And I think one of the most amazing experiences was going through steps two and three, and my sponsor, he tasked me, he said, look, go and speak to five people in recovery who have a strong program, who you respect their recovery, and just ask them what their concept of higher power is. And I think one of the most amazing and unexpected things I got out of that was every single person said, well, it depends, you know, it changes, it's not the same, it's not the same all the time. And it was that their answers were so incredibly personal to them that I was really shocked, because I thought, you know, I was still kind of that mind that it's got to be something religious, like there is, you know, a God, there is a, you know, a man sitting on a thundercloud hurling righteous thunderbolts, you know, that kind of thing. So I was really surprised that it was so personal. And you know, these days to me, I take my higher power I find in the fellowship and I find in these rooms, because, you know, me, myself, on my own, in a room, I can't do shit when it comes to recovery, when I'm sitting there by myself, trying desperately to recover. But when there's another recovering addict, you know, we kind of band together, that is a power that is bigger than me, that's bigger than just me. So I take my higher power from that. And yeah, and sometimes it does change, you know, sometimes it's just the fact that, you know, we exist and there's, you know, there's sunshine that keeps us going and there's, you know, fresh air and whatnot. And it sounds cheesy, but like, it's, you know, sometimes it is and it keeps me going. Cool. Yeah. Thanks for the acknowledgement. So yeah, you know, that was kind of, that was something I found difficult. And I know, I got really anxious about doing steps 4 and 5 and steps 8 and 9. I was shitting bricks about those steps, because step 4, you know, I had this preconception I would be put before a tribunal, you know, and I would have to read out all these, just this history of terrible things that I had done, and, you know, this searching and fearless moral inventory, you know. But I was full of fear at the time, so it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. And I have to say, it remains as one of the most amazing things that I've ever done in my entire life. It's, you know, my old sponsor, he likened it to carrying around a rucksack full of rocks, and, you know, you feel exhausted and you feel in pain and you don't quite know why. And then step 4, you take this rucksack off and you look at these rocks and you actually look at what they are and you kind of put them into the light, you know, and it takes a lot of the power out of them, and then you just start throwing them away and you just feel lighter. It is that kind of unburdening of just stuff from the past, like so much stuff. And I remember, you know, thinking of some of the quote unquote worst things that I ever did and being so fearful when my sponsor said, right, we're going to read all this stuff out, we're going to sit in a park and you're going to read your step 4 out and you're going to tell me all these so-called terrible things. And I got to this one, which I was like, I warned him, I was like, no, this one's really bad, you know, this one's terrible, I don't know what you're going to say to this. And I read it out and he said, yeah, I did the same thing. Cool. What's next on the list, you know? And I was amazed at that, because I thought, you know, if this man, you know, this person can relate to, you know, these terrible things that I've done and can actually say, you know what? Yeah, I did something very similar. You know, we've all been there. Then, you know, there's hope, which was really nice. And I remember, you know, after reading this step 4 out to him in the park, you know, had it all written down, you know, all kind of 40 or 50 pages of it, he said, you know, I'm going to give you a choice now. So either you can put this step 4, you can put it in a drawer at home, and from time to time, you know, you can open that drawer when you're feeling really shit and you can read over all this terrible stuff and you can just remind yourself all this dreadful stuff you've done, or we can put it on the ground and we can burn it. And I was a little bit skeptical about that at first, because I thought, you know, that was a lot of work. You know, that was kind of 3 or 4 months of work. And I was like, do you really, really want me to burn this? But then I kind of understood where he was coming from. And I just thought it was so funny, because it was a windy day and we were trying to burn this step 4 and it just wouldn't catch fire, you know, and we were burning ourselves on the lighters, you know, it just wouldn't go. It was just sticking around. And when it finally caught fire, you know, there were these words that just stuck out, and they stayed there right till the very, you know, last flames kind of curled in on them. Things like self-obsession, you know, intolerance, like impatience, self-pity. And I thought, God, that's really apt. So yeah, that was quite funny. And just quickly with, I've got about a minute left, steps 8 and 9 as well, those were kind of huge ones, which I was terrified about. And again, you know, it's like an unburdening of all this stuff from the past. And my old sponsor, you know, he always used to say to me, it'll always be different to how you expect. And they were completely. I was absolutely terrified that I was going to go and talk to these people from my past and make these amends. And they were just going to say, I don't want to have anything to do with you. I'm not going to forgive you. And I was approaching it really with the wrong kind of attitude, because it's not really about that. People will say what they want to say. And I needed to allow them the time to say that. But really, it was for myself, you know, more than anyone. It was to, you know, take that load and to make those amends and kind of leave the past in the past. And, you know, one of the best amends that I've been making is, you know, a continuing living amends to myself. And I remember sitting down to write step eight, and I just, my sponsor said, you know, there's one person more than anyone else who you owe amends to. And I just couldn't figure it out. It's like, it's got to be my mum. No, no, it's my partner. No, no, but my sister, you know, when that time when I really, really hurt her. And they said, no, no, mate, it's yourself. You know, you got to make this list of all these living amends you got to make to yourself. Just be kind to yourself. And yeah, I've I took a lot from that. So yeah, I think my time's about up. So I think I'll leave it there. There were probably all kinds of stuff which I had planned that I was going to say, you know, in the week leading up to this. Yeah, I'm going to say this, this, and this, and this, and this, and this. But you know, totally different to how I expected. But yeah, it's been really nice. I just wanted to thank Dez for asking me to come and do the chair. It was really, really nice, really good experience. So thanks everyone. I'll leave it there.